there, ladies and gentlemen, dungeon delvers, adventurers, and restful souls. My name is Jared, and with me, the adventurer, the dungeon delver expert, sometimes a restful soul herself, Anna.
Hello, everybody.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you've joined us at our table. Today, we will be at the Two Top table looking at three different games, all centered around solo play, with an option to bring in another player. First up, we have Isla and Something Shiny, designed by Jeffrey CCH, artwork created by Roxy Day, and published by North Star Games.
So in Isla and Something Shiny, you will be choosing your own adventure and trying to figure out a puzzle inspired by the hero's journey. You're on a quest to find one's place in the greater circle of life. Through daring, loving, aggressive, and careful choices, players can determine Isla's path through five different scenario adventures with different endings depending on the choices that you make.
So let's settle in at the table, get cozy, and discuss.
All right, Jared.
Yeah?
So Isla and Something Shiny is about a cute little rabbit that goes on an adventure.
That's right.
And we're not going to do too many spoilers for this game, but this game can be played at solo mode, or it could be played with more than that. And so I'm curious, when you go on adventures, when you go exploring or try something new, do you prefer to do that alone or with a partner?
I think if I'm going into something new, I want someone there with me.
An expert or just somebody else who's on the same playing field as you?
Yeah, I don't know that it matters. Okay. I think just somebody, I mean, obviously, like, I like doing that with you a lot of times, because I think what it really is there, like, for me, in addition to just enjoying that person being there, what it does for me internally is it gives me, like, this internal peace that I'm not alone and that I actually can't, like, we can do this. As opposed to when I do it on my own, I'm like, oh no, like, I start overthinking it and I get lost in my own head and then I start panicking. No, that's usually with like newer stuff that I'm not as familiar with. But if it's something that I'm like well versed in, like there's stuff like I used to go to the movie theater all the time by myself. I could go on a walk by myself. I could do activities by myself. Like that's not a big deal. But if it is something new, something adventurous, then yeah, I usually would prefer to have somebody else with me. What about you?
Well, that's so interesting because I typically prefer to have other people with me. I enjoy company. I'm pretty extroverted. But I would say when I'm learning, like actively learning and engaging something new, I kind of go a little bit more solo mode.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm thinking, unless I have somebody who's an expert that's like teaching me. You know, that's a different thing. Like if I'm going something, horseback riding for the first time, exploring this cave for the first time, whatever, and I have somebody that knows it, I'd rather go with somebody. But I don't know, when I was trying to figure out some hiking trails, when I was getting into mushroom foraging, I was trying to figure out the different kinds of mushrooms and going on those, but or even foraging in general, like when I went out to gather elderberries, I kind of wanted to do it by myself because I didn't know if it would be fun for somebody else. I hadn't even tried it myself. I didn't know if it'd be fun for somebody else. I didn't really consider myself to be an expert to where I thought I could teach other people about how to forage berries or mushrooms or where this hiking path led or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe just because I feel a sense of responsibility if I invite somebody with me. If I'm learning a brand new skill or going somewhere where I don't know anything about it, I want to either at least do like research on my own ahead of time or go there on my own ahead of time to see what it's up before I get somebody else involved.
That is very interesting.
I know. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It's a true story, though.
I'm listening to you talk. I'm like, if I took a lot of time and thought through it, how many times would I prefer to do things on my own versus with somebody else when it's a new thing? Because I do think there are times that it applies what you're talking about that I would prefer to just figure it out on my own.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, like, even when you were doing woodworking projects, though, you liked having somebody else to talk through solutions with and figure stuff out with.
Yeah, with woodworking, I just get too far in my head all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't just try the project until I'm up against the deadline.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
So let's talk about this game.
Yeah.
So in Isla, you're controlling this character, Isla the Bunny. And in the prologue, which is not one of your five scenarios, you are basically given this adventure quest that you're supposed to go on. We're not going to go into too many details about the story because obviously that is the game. But the way each scenario is set up, you are given stacks of cards. You have your basic stack, which is what you're going to go through the first round of your story. You have cards that can be triggered as future events and cards that can be triggered as immediate events based on certain choices that you make throughout the game. You will go one card at a time. You'll flip up the card. You'll read what it is. You'll read your different choices, and then you pick what you want to do. A lot of times, that card will then go into the future deck to be used on a future turn. Sometimes, though, once you've done the action, that's all that card can do for you, and it goes out of the game for the rest of that round. Then, once all the cards are spent, whatever new cards you've collected from the future deck, in addition to the cards that went into the new future deck, you shuffle all those up, put them back in the stand, and then repeat the next round.
And each round is a day.
You have a week in each scenario. And each scenario is going to have different things that it wants you to complete. Like, you might need to collect certain things, or you might need to, you know, defeat something, or you might need to, whatever it may be. You have to do that thing before you can actually get out and move on to the next thing. And depending on what choices you make will determine the ending that you get to experience, which does have ramifications later on down the road. During the game, as you're going through these cards, you might need to spend certain resources. You'll collect things like carrots, which represent food, or coins for your money. You might collect stars, which can power up certain abilities. Additionally, you do have to try and survive each day, so you'll need to collect resources to survive at the end of the round. You'll need to collect knowledge to be able to turn that in for other things, or just to be able to do certain abilities that you want to do. But there are also exhaustion tokens that can consume your board and keep you from being able to do some of the things that you want to do. Fortunately, in addition to this basic structure of going through the cards and then collecting tokens or resources, there's also additional cards that you can collect that pass with you from scenario to scenario. Because none of the cards in scenario one move to scenario two except for the specific ability and tool cards that you collect along the way. Again, like we said earlier, there are five scenarios. Each scenario plays very differently and has very different focuses. And then when you get to the end of the entire campaign, there is a outcome based on how you played. And we will discuss that later on in this episode because there is going to be one spoiler thing I do want to discuss, but I will give plenty of warning before we get to that. So with that, let's head back over and discuss.
So Jared, this game is meant for one or more, and
that's
we
right.
played it at two players.
Yep.
And I'll just go ahead and get us started here because this was a game that I pulled off the shelf and demoed at Gen Con last year and said, I want to play this. And mm-hmm. so you and I have been playing through this game over the course of a year. Doesn't have to take everybody that long, but that's how...
It won't take most people that
long. It
won't
take most people that long, but we went slowly through it. Definitely just repeatedly failed at least one scenario that we had to play like four times before we finally passed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why that one was so hard.
But we did have one that like we in particular struggled with.
Yes.
And there was also a move and some other things in that. I don't even think it was a year that it took us to play, but it did take a longer time because
that's
of some
true.
Life things.
That's true. Because I think I demoed it and liked it at Gen Con last year, but then maybe you got it for me for Christmas.
Yeah, we didn't
or something
buy it
like
at
that.
Gen Con. It was a Christmas gift that the kids gave to you. And yes. then I don't think we started playing it until sometime in 2025. So.
Okay, fine. Whatever. Anyway.
So I'm just trying to paint, like, even if you go really slow, like, it's not going to take a full year to play.
There are five chapters. There are five scenarios. You do have to win the scenario to proceed.
Yep.
but you can do that. You know, we did only have that one scenario that really got us stuck that we had to play, I think, four times or whatever to succeed. But anyway, the reason why I chose this game was because it seemed like a fun story game. Jared and I were talking before the episode, is this a choose your own adventure game or not?
Right.
And the reason why I chose it is because it did feel like a story game. We're going to go through the story. We're going to have to overcome challenges. We're going to grow as a person. We're going to figure out who we are at the end of it. And there were some story aspects to this game, but I would categorize it a little bit more as like a puzzle slash story game. Because, and this is something that you see really early on, even in the prologue, as you're going through the cards, like Jared was saying, you've got to put some in the future deck. And so you know what's coming and you can kind of see, oh, hey, there's this card that came up that I need this resource for. Well, if I know another card gets that resource and I save this resource, now I've got it the next time this card comes up. And so you're kind of figuring stuff out along the way because you see the cards frequently. And it felt a little bit more like figuring out a puzzle for each scenario. And then the story aspect was a secondary component, was just kind of a fun component along with the puzzle. How did you feel about that? I'm curious.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that the story aspect was secondary to the puzzle.
Okay.
Which
wasn't what I was expecting. I was expecting it to be a more story game.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time we got to even the first or second scenario, I was like, this is a lot more like you're trying to figure out how do all these cards work together and how can I make the outcome that I want or the outcome that's going to make me not die or whatever it is.
Sure.
So I wanted to mention that for other people that there is a story there. I'm not going to downplay that, but it's not just a story game where you're trying to go through the story and overcome the monsters in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can hear the sigh in my voice because I'm just going to go ahead. I'm going to get it out on the front end. So this is a quasi spoiler. It has nothing to do with the story, but it does have to do with the game. So if you don't want a spoiler, I would say jump ahead like a minute and a half or 2 minutes because I'll be quick about this. But for me, I was really wanting it to be a story game. And when I got to the end of it, the way that our scenarios played out based off of our choices, we were told this is not the best way to win this game. And you can go back and try again, playing it a different way to get a better outcome. But you can't just like, you don't find that out until the very end of the game. And so that really just solidified, this is really a puzzle and it's hidden by a story. And I don't know that it did enough for me. I think, and this is why I think it is better at two people, and we'll kind of circle back around to this, I guess. If you are looking for a puzzle, this is fun. Like this is going to be something that's going to take a lot of time to really kind of figure out. And it's going to take really thinking about, okay, how do all these pieces, not just from this scenario, but from previous scenarios, how do they all tie in together to become what you are trying to complete?
Mm-hmm. And there's more that you're trying to complete than initially meets the eye.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not just about the challenge because like Jared said, you're collecting certain things along the way. And so essentially, you're building a type of character along the way. And you've got several different areas where you can upgrade in this area or upgrade in that area or get this skill or that skill. And that really impacts future games because not only are you beating each scenario, but you're creating your character developing along the way.
That's right. And you're kind of committing to what you want this character to be.
Yeah.
In some ways. Like some of it depends on, like I'm thinking about the scenario that gave us a lot of trouble. There were times where we kind of just threw our hands up and said, this isn't ideal, but it's going to get us out of this scenario.
Yeah. And I remember there were, I think, three different endings to that scenario that mm-hmm. we got stuck on. And I remember we intentionally were like, we found the three different ways to win as we were going through the scenario, but then it's like you had to pick how are you going to set up the puzzle
right.
to win one of those three ways. And I remember us saying, well, we don't want to win this way because it's the mean way and we don't want to be mean. So we ended up trying to figure out how to win one of the other two ways. But yeah, I mean, like, that impacted us in future games. I think it would have if we'd done the mean way, and it definitely did the way that we did it, too.
Yeah. But, I mean, so thinking about, like, the different cards that you find along the way and the cards that get added, I mean, there's some aspects of the game that are kind of fun because there's some, like, you know, push your luck. Like, okay, this is going to give you something good now, but you already know that when you grab this card, it's going to make it a little bit harder and you're going to pay for it later on. Do you want to do that or do you want to go a different route? So there's fun little aspects like that that you find within the cards themselves, which I did enjoy. But I will say that for me, if you're really looking for the story, the downside to those cards cycling is that you start to see some of the same cards over and over again. And that takes you out of the story a little bit. And it kind of moves you into this puzzle. So I keep saying it that way because for me, it was a letdown. But if you're someone who really likes a story, I'm sorry, if you're someone who really likes a puzzle and you want a puzzle that's unique to some of these other, like, more straightforward, just this is a puzzle and we're going to call it a puzzle. And it is a, like, it is. If you want something a little more unique, that's a little, got a little bit of a different wrapper on it, that you'll get some story out of it, then I think this could be for you. And I want to really push that because I think that is who this game is designed for. And I will say too, and you can jump in on this because I'm curious, if I played this game at solo, I really would not have enjoyed it. I think for me, having the opportunity to talk it through with you, to talk about different choices, to kind of engage in the story that is there through, like, voices and things like that, that's what made it fun for me. But if I'm just sitting there, like, silently piecing out this puzzle, I don't know that I would have enjoyed it as much.
I will say that, yes, it was fun to play with two players from a story perspective. In two players, you play the exact same as you would in solo mode, mm-hmm. just you take turns making the choices on the cards. And we could talk about, oh, what do we want to do this way? Or, oh, hey, I think this card goes with this one. I think this helps solve the puzzle. And we did talk about, we would use voices for the different characters and, oh, and, like, talk back and forth with the other characters. So that did enhance. There's a little bit of role play that did enhance the story aspect of it. Now, I think if I'm getting this game, not thinking that it's a story game, but thinking that it's a puzzle game, I would like it at solo because I could go through the scenarios faster.
Yeah.
I could just really focus on the puzzle, get in the groove and figure it out and go through a scenario a couple times even. Because thinking about, like, when we got to the end of the game, there's the ability to replay, make different choices, come up with a different outcome. I think had I played it solo, I would be much willing to say, oh yeah, let me start out, see what happens next, you know?
Sure.
Versus playing with somebody else and getting into the story, it felt a little bit like, well, why would I want to go back and play it again? Because we made our story. So I think that that is what, how you want to engage it depends on if it would be good at one player or two player. But we do want to talk about some of our favorite mechanics of the game as well. Just wanted to right out the gate say that we both agreed that this is more of a puzzle game. So if you're a puzzly person, you want to try it out, do it. If you're somebody looking for a classic story game, maybe think about it, or at least know what you're getting into if you're going to get this game. I will say, though, that the game had many just excellent mechanics in it. For a puzzle game, it had very good diversity in the puzzles that it presented.
I would agree with that.
Every single scenario had different things, and I can't even tell people what the things are because I don't want to do any spoilers, but there were things that you didn't have to pay attention to in one scenario on the cards that you did in another scenario, and you were like, oh my goodness, that was important. I didn't even think that was important. There were maps that you had to decipher and figure out. There were just all sorts of different aspects. So there was a dungeon crawl type feeling one. Mm-hmm. There were lots of different types of puzzles, and there were lots of different ways to figure out the puzzle that really made the game feel fresh and not like you could just settle and be like, oh, I know how this works, because the next scenario would throw a curveball at you again. So that was a really fun part of the game for me. How about you?
I thought the premise of the story was really fun. Yeah. I thought there was a really cool concept there, and I think that's part of why I'm bummed that it was more puzzle than story, because the story that's there is really interesting, and I want to know more about Isla and what Isla chooses to do. And I wanted to have I wanted to be able to kind of go on this adventure and focus on that adventure. And I do wonder too, because, you know, we said we had to spread this game out over a long period of time because of life circumstances. But I wonder if the game plays a little bit better if you play it over the course of like a couple of weeks, because much like a TV show, which is ironic that I'm like comparing another story avenue to this, but if you play it over the course of a couple weeks, you're able to keep up with some of the choices that you made, which can then tie into some of your next decisions and so on and so forth. So, and I do,
that's a good point. Yeah.
I do like the concept of if I do A, that affects B, which then affects C, which then affects D. And you saw that sometimes, and then other times you didn't really see it, but it was kind of working in the background, which is still cool. And then sometimes it just, that was the decision, and that was just the end of it. It never came up again. There were definitely some choices, and I've already mentioned the push your luck mechanic of this card's good and it's going to help you, but it's going to bring up a bad thing later. And do you want to deal with that later, or do you want to slough this card now? So I like that aspect as well. I will say, so I like that there's a lot of cards.
Yes.
You're not going to see all the cards.
Right. So I'm thinking we didn't even see half the cards in the playthrough. I mean, we saw cards that were in the scenario themselves, but the other cards you could bring out from different choices, we didn't even see half.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of things that could happen based on your choices that we didn't see.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're going to see some of the same stuff, but you're also going to see some different things too.
Yeah. And each scenario starts with a cute little comic book.
Yeah.
That introduces the scenario. And then depending on the ending that you get, you have a cute little comic book at the end that goes through your ending as well. And so you're bookended by story, even as you're doing the puzzle in the middle, which again, helps you feel like you're continuing to go through the scenario. Oh, I've made progress. I'm now at this point in my mission. And the comics and the art on the cards were very, very cute and unique the way that, yeah, because you're encountering different animals, because she's a bunny, you know, obviously, and you're encountering other different animal folk, and they have different jobs and different personalities and different ways that they function. And so that felt fun. It did feel immersive in the world if you paid attention to the art and the comics and enjoyed it for that purpose as well.
But I also liked the fact that the story took on some serious tones, even though it has this like cute, light vibe to it.
Yes, 100%. Yes. And I remember the person that demoed it for us even mentioning that, because I was seeing a bunny and being like, hey, maybe we can play this with our kids. Mm-hmm. The box says 12+. And they were like, no, there's some pretty mature themes in here.
Yeah.
Which really was good. It made the game have more weight to it. The decisions had more weight to them.
100%.
Because of that. But yes, definitely the box rating is correct. You think, oh, I'm just going to draw a card and make a decision. Anybody could do that. No, the themes in this, you really want to play more teenager adult.
Well, and again, when you realize that the puzzle has such a significant impact on the game, like a 7-year-old's not going to see that. There's just not enough there's too much nuance for that. I think something else that I like for what this is the rules don't get in the way of the game. The rules very simple, very easy to get into. The rule book has a section for each scenario, so you can easily reference that scenario and what rule you might be questioning, and there's like 6 for the whole thing.
Yes.
So it's very much you focus on the cards, you focus on what you're trying to do, and I think that was a very good decision, because I think if you had too many rules, it would bog down the other aspects of the game that you're really trying to focus on.
Yes. Yes, this is a game you can really get out and play even if you haven't played it in a couple months like we did as we were moving.
Oh, that part was super easy. Yeah.
So it was really nice that we could just get it out and say, oh, we know how to play this.
Yep.
The box is very well organized in terms of the components for the different scenarios and where everything goes and how to get things out, and to where you don't have spoilers in seeing things from future scenarios. And there were, again, things that surprised, because not all the scenarios are just on cards. There were other components that came out, which were really cool that they were thoughtful about being diverse in the ways that they presented things.
I will say one more thing that I really enjoyed. It was at the very end of the game. And there is a sneaky little thing that they did that I'm not going to say, even as a spoiler, what they did. But I thought it was very clever. And yeah. It was unique. And you don't see it until
they tell you to look for it.
Until they tell you to look for it.
Yeah, it was really, cool. Really fun.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, what about, I mean, we've kind of talked about it, but are there other things you want to mention that you don't really care for about this game?
No, I'd say that was the main thing. And again, once I started viewing it as a puzzle game, I really enjoyed it. I remember by like the second time we played it saying, hey, we thought this was a story game, but it's definitely a lot more like X. And I mentioned another kind of puzzle-y mm-hmm. game where you've got to encounter the same scenario a bunch of times in order to figure it out.
Right.
And once I started seeing it like that, it was fun and I could enjoy the story at the beginning and end and enjoy trying to figure out the puzzle in the middle with you. So yeah, it was fun.
So I'll just finish with, again, the thing I started with, because I think that's where I land on it. This game is not for me because I'm not as much a puzzle person, which is sure. In some ways weird to say as a board gamer because a lot of games center around puzzles. But this one was too like in my face, like that's what this is. And I did get burned by the thing at the end. I really didn't like that, but it's fine. So I would say if you're somebody who really enjoys puzzles and wants something new, then this is going to be a really good game. I'd probably give it probably 7.5 or an 8, especially as a good date night experience if you're both really into that. For me, I'm probably going to put it more at like, I think it's like a 5.5 for me. Like if I wasn't playing with you, I don't know. I don't know if I'd have finished it.
Really?
But again, that's
me. You don't think you'd even finish it?
I don't know.
Interesting.
Because that one scenario, the scenario that we struggled with also kind of lost me on the story. Like I was fully sucked out of the part that I was interested in.
Okay.
And it became I've just got to complete this thing. And from there, it just became, we've just got to complete this thing. And it like took me out of the part that I really enjoyed. And so, to me, I think that would have been my breaking point if I played by myself.
Sure. Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So I'd say if I was going to rate it, and I thought we used report card grades in the two top.
We do. Yes. That's on
me. So, because I'm not Ian, you know.
You're not Ian.
So.
That's true.
So if I was going to grade it, I'd give it a B.
Oh, okay. Well, that I think is what an 8 translates to. So, yeah.
Yes. I'd give it a B. I also did not like the way that it ended because I felt blindsided by it a little bit. I felt blindsided and this is going to refer back to Jared's spoiler earlier, but it's going to just be one sentence. So skip the next 10 seconds. I felt blindsided by the idea that you could beat all the challenges, but do it the wrong way.
Yep.
And I didn't feel like that was something that I saw throughout the game or saw clues of throughout the game, that was something I needed to pay attention to. So
sure.
That was frustrating to me at the end, to get to the end and then be told that. Now, again, I think some people might see that and be like, oh man, I can play through it again and pay attention to this whole new world I didn't really think about the first time.
That's right.
And maybe that's great for some people. So I'm giving it a B because of that, for one thing.
Sure.
And because I really enjoyed playing through it with you. But I was a little bit caught off guard by the fact that there wasn't as much story in it as I expected.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a solid game. The puzzles are cool. The artwork is beautiful. And I think there's lots of enjoyment for people that do think that they would like this type of game.
For sure. Next up, we have Gentle Rain, designed by Kevin Wilson, Chris Billeheimer, and Victor Kazira. Artwork created by Chris Billeheimer and Victor Kazria, and published by Incredible Dream Studios.
So Gentle Rain is a very peaceful tile laying game where players will thoughtfully lay lake tiles in order to complete and place flowers. In this game, players are competing against the game itself because you're trying to place all of the flowers without getting stuck to where you cannot place another tile and therefore create a flower. And this can only be done with very careful and intentional play.
This game is very interesting to me. So this game almost is like an exercise if you read the rule book, because I'm just going to start off here with the first. This is the very first instruction.
I see.
Get comfortable. I don't think another board game has ever told me this. No, this next sentence. Change into some loose clothing if you can. Perhaps turn on some soft music or make yourself some tea or hot cocoa. Take a moment to stand up and stretch and roll the stress out of your shoulders. Inhale through your nose. Hold that breath for a moment, then exhale through your mouth. That's step one in the instructions,
so,
like verbatim.
I think that if more games gave instructions like that, people might like the game better, honestly, because any
game— No, it's not a critique.
I'm doing after I stretch and get hot cocoa is going to seem better to me.
I agree. It very much caught me off guard the first time I read it because yeah. I was like, oh, this is like a full-on experience.
Right,
this isn't
right,
just
right.
a little puzzle.
We need to experience this game.
We need to experience peace.
That's right.
And gentleness.
Well, so that's your opening question, Jared. How do you relax and find peace in your life? You can choose some of the options that the instructions just gave you, or you can come up with your own.
Oh, gosh. This is not a good question for this point in my life because there's not a lot of peace or rest.
That's why you need to figure out how to find it,
I need
Jared.
To play Gentle Rain more and follow instruction number one.
That's right.
I love going out and sitting in a hammock and either just something where I can just enjoy the breeze and just relax. I love a good hammock resting time.
There you go. All right.
What about you?
Oh, well, I mean, I do it the Gentle Rain way.
Oh.
Yeah. My relaxation is take a deep breath, change into comfortable clothes,
okay,
fix myself tea, and then I do enjoy going outside, but of course, in Gentle Rain, you're creating a lake, so essentially that's the outside
sure.
part of it, really.
Sure.
And then either listening to or I actually really enjoy playing music.
Okay.
As on the piano as a way of relaxing as well.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's actually not a ton more to this game than what I said in the game blurb.
Yeah, this game is very straightforward. I mean, the artwork is really, it's interesting. It definitely makes you feel like you're creating this lake
yes.
as you put it together. The lily pads are very vibrant. And I don't know, like it's just, I mean, so I know that there's a couple different versions of this game, and they're the exact same gameplay-wise, but one is more compact and very tight and makes it easier to play in a lot of different places, and the other one's got a little bit of a bigger feel with nice chunky wooden tokens for the flowers and gives a little bit more of a, I don't want to say an epicness, but more of a vast feel to the lake itself.
I would say an elegance as well.
Yeah.
A little bit with the different tokens. Yeah, and I will say a little bit more about how to play than I said in the game blurb. So,
sure.
So essentially in this game, it is a tile laying game. Each tile has on the four sides of the tile half of a flower. And the flowers all come in different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And you can only lay tiles that complete a flower. So whenever you lay the first tile, the next tile has to line up. It has to be the other half of one of the flowers of the tile that it's touching, which is pretty easy when you've got one tile. But when you've got three tiles and you've got to find a tile that completes the three flowers that would be touching
mm-hmm.
that are in a row, that becomes a little bit more difficult.
Sure.
Once you complete a full set of four tiles in a 4x4 or in a 2x2 grid, each of the tiles has the corner kind of shaved off of it where it will create a circle in
right.
the middle of that two by two grid. And at that point in time, you can choose one of the flowers that was just completed, and you can place the matching flower token. So each flower, each color has one wooden token, and you're placing that in the center of your completed circle.
Mm-hmm.
And if later on in the game you complete another tile and there's not that color available anymore, you can't place it in the center.
Sure.
And so essentially you're trying to create this lake where all of the flowers have matches and you don't get stuck, and where you can place all of those wooden tokens. And that is how you play Gentle Rain.
Yeah, and your timer is the tiles. Like once you run out of tiles, your game is over and you score based on how well you did or not so well.
Yes, yes.
This game's very interesting to me, and I'll add in the reason that I love this game at two way more than I do at one. A second player protects me from myself. Because while this game is gentle and cozy and tells you to put on loose sweatpants and drink your cocoa while you're lazily laying down some lily pads, there is a interesting and complicated puzzle that you're trying to piece together. And when I play it solo, I get so frustrated. And I'm like, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing, but this is where I'm at because I want this to work and I want to do well and yada, yada, yada. But if I'm with somebody else, I don't want to screw up their vibe and I want to keep that peaceful area that we're playing at the table. And so it's a little bit easier for me to just kind of let it go and just try it out and we'll just kind of see how well we can do.
Yeah, I would actually agree with every single thing you just said, that this is a fun game to play solo because you're still trying to figure out how the tiles are going to fit together. But I would say when I play this game solo, I get more frustrated
yep.
than I do when I play it with two or even more players because I've played it with all the kids before because really you can play because you're just drawing a tile and laying it, you know? And that was fun because with the kids, we would lay our tiles down and we'd strategize. Oh, I think this one could go here. Oh, I think this one could go here. And so, yes, playing with two or even more players made this an enjoyable game for me because I wasn't so frustrated when I didn't figure out the puzzle because it wasn't all my fault when I didn't figure out the puzzle.
There you go.
Yeah, that's how it goes. But I mean, I think either way, it's intended to be more centered around the piece. I mean, and if you don't figure out the puzzle, it doesn't call you a loser like those old Cracker Barrel games.
It does not.
you know, you still get a score.
Yeah.
Even if you haven't laid every single one of, even if you haven't placed every single one of the wooden flower tokens or placed every single one of the house, you still get a score. And then essentially it's like next time you can just say, hey, let me see if I can beat my score. Let me see if I do this or that. So you really don't have to feel like a loser, just only if you're like a perfectionist that struggles with not doing things perfectly.
Yeah, or if you're someone who's like really competitive, even with yourself, you know.
Or with the game, yeah.
That's right.
And I think the game is really designed where I don't even think it's possible to win every time because if the tiles are shuffled in a certain way and you lay them out and there's a space that needs this type of tile and you've already used that tile because it came out earlier or whatever. I mean, there's sometimes where you're just going to get stuck and it's not your fault. It's not because you didn't do it right. It's just because the way the tiles fell.
And in this game, it's like, it gives you scoring. And then it's like, if you don't get all eight, don't worry about it. You can always return to the lake again. And I think that's much more true in this game than it is in Isla because this is like a 15 minute commit.
For sure.
And it's much easier to say, okay, I didn't do it the way I wanted to, or I could have played this so much better based on what I saw here, here, and here. Now I can try again. And because that time commit is so much smaller, it's so much easier to be like, yeah, I'll come back to the lake again and try again. But then there are times where I still get super competitive with myself. This game is that kind of puzzle. Like because at first when I first started reading, I was like, all right, this isn't going to be that big of a deal. And then I started playing and I was like, oh, snap, this is a lot. So,
yeah, I don't know that anyone that we've introduced this game to has only played it just once.
No.
Every single time. And it helps that it is a shorter game that you can play through it in just 15 minutes or so. But every single person we've introduced this game to has been like, oh, man, let's do it again. We can do better. And that's kind of a cool part of it. Yeah. When you get to the end, you don't want to be done. You want to go back to the lake again.
Well, and I don't know that anybody wins on their first turn either, you know, on their first time playing. It's usually almost always, oh, dang, I got close, but I didn't quite get there. So let's do it again kind of thing.
Right. But remember.
I know.
It's not, you don't have to place all the
tiles to win.
Even just
talking about it, I think about it.
You just get a different score. It's not about that, Jared.
Wow. Okay.
So well, as you gentle listeners can probably hear, Jared has trouble relaxing, even with such a relaxing game as Gentle Rain.
That's true.
And I would say that that's what you got to ask yourself with this game. This is another puzzle game, but it definitely markets itself as a puzzle game, and it markets itself as a thoughtful, peaceful, contemplative, relaxing puzzle game. And so the question is, does it do that? Does it deliver on what it's promised? And I really think it does. I think the quality of the tiles, we have the version that has the wooden tokens. We have a friend that has an even more upgraded version where the flowers are actually three-dimensional and have the petals, and it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, yeah, the quality of the components, the fact that you're building the flowers and you're watching the lake get bigger and more flowers appear, I think it does deliver. I think it is somehow a very peaceful puzzle game. What do you think, Jared?
It's interesting because I think if I really challenge myself to relax instead of focusing on the game.
Oh my goodness, you can't challenge yourself to relax. Goodness gracious, what is wrong with you?
No. What I'm trying to say is,
oh, relax. I'm up to the challenge. I can do it. 1, 2, 3, relax.
Whatever, man.
I'm sorry I interrupted
you. No, you're not. You're not sorry at all. You're not even close to sorry. I think I can't speak to this because I haven't done it, because clearly I have a problem with relaxing. But if I wanted to, if I took this, like, the full exercise super seriously, and I did all the things, I got my hot cocoa, and I put on my sweatpants, and I did all the things.
Oh my goodness, you played this game without following the first instruction?
I do.
There's your problem right there, guys. I don't.
No,
I'm sorry. I'm messing.
You're
too
still
much.
Not sorry.
I'm so sorry. All go right. ahead.
What I was gonna say is, I think that you could almost process out a complicated thought process in your head.
You're gonna algorithm the game?
No, you're not hearing me. Like, let's say I have a really difficult thing to think about, or I just want to process some either emotion or situation. I could see a scenario where you're just sitting there, you think about your thing, whatever it is, you lay a tile, you sip your cocoa. Like, I think that game can sit there to help facilitate that quiet time. Because I think we a lot of times struggle with quiet time because we're so used to so much noise. And the game is light enough where you could still think about the things that you want to think about, but you could still have that there to help you.
There you go. That turned out really beautiful. Thank you
for... It was a journey to get there.
Thank you for persisting. Yeah, that's a cool idea that you can actually use this game to help you de-stress, is
that's
what
right.
you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to kind of just process in mm-hmm. general, for sure.
I like that. Well, was there anything that you felt like the game was lacking or that you did not like about the game?
No, I think for what it is, I enjoyed it. I mean... I don't think it's like my favorite game in the entire world, but it is hard for me to critique something like this when it is a very unique and specific exercise.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I can't really think of anything that they could do better for the type of game that they're wanting to do.
Right.
And I don't even really know. I'm like curious, are they going to do other versions? Are they going to do expansions? I mean, they've got the different, the ones with the slightly different components that they've already released, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like if they did, you wouldn't really add anything. You'd almost just do a different scenario or a different setting or something instead.
Yeah, I agree. It would have to be a different setting. And obviously, this version would have to do well enough to justify something like that. Because it's hard to justify two different versions of the same exact game. I wouldn't want an expansion for this. Like, I think it is what it's supposed to be, and it doesn't need anything else. So,
agreed.
What would you, what grade would you give this game?
I would give this game an A.
Okay.
For what it is. And I don't think that it would come to mind when people are asking me, hey, what's your top 5 list of games? Or hey, what's your top 10 list of games like people like to do, you know?
Yeah.
But I would definitely give it an A.
Yeah.
Because I played it and I wanted to play it again. And then I wanted to show it to my kids. And then they wanted to play it again. And then I wanted to show it to this friend and that friend. And it just kind of quietly does what it does. And it's a great game.
You know, it's really interesting because I do think about that point where a lot of friends have played this game and all have walked away with a good experience. So that's really cool. I almost wouldn't grade this game. I would almost treat it like this is an incredible extra credit assignment where the student did their work and they did a good job. Maybe, you know, we're going to talk about another Incredible Dream studio game here in a minute with Kinfire. And so they did that. And then they're like, oh, also, I'm going to do this other thing for just for fun. I'm going to show the teacher. And the teacher's going to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to give you an extra 10 points of extra credit. Like, it's top tier extra credit is what it is. Because I'm with you. It'll never make a top list for me. But I don't know that I ever wanted to get off my shelf either.
Yeah.
And I don't really fit it in with the majority of the games that I own. Like, it's own separate thing.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting take. I like it.
Cool.
Well, let us go on now to our third game. So for our third game, we will be looking at Vainglory's Grotto. This is in the Kinfire universe, and it is designed by Kevin Wilson with artwork created by Katarzyna Bekas, Sandra Schluinska, Kate Vesner-Redeswick, and Victor Quisiera, and published by Incredible Dream Studios.
Victor, we've said your name about six different ways, so would love to know how you actually pronounce
it. Yeah, reach out. Tell us how to pronounce your name. Like, seriously, I'm curious.
Sorry about that, Victor. Vainglory's Grotto is a cooperative dungeon delve. As Anna said, it is set in the world of Kinfire Chronicles. So there's a number of games in this little world now. Players take on the role of characters as they face various combats, traps, and puzzles, all in hopes of defeating Vainglory in an epic showdown at the end.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. All right, Anna, I'm curious.
All right. Tell me.
There's like a bunch of different tropes in tabletop RPGs. You have your rogue and your main buff tanky fighter. You know, you have your ranged archer, you have your mage. Do you have a stereotype that you like gravitate towards? Because I feel like so many things and so many different ideas pull from these tropes, and they put their own spin on them, of course, but they all kind of go back to this base.
For
and
sure.
So I'm really curious if you have one that you really kind of navigate to, or not navigate, if you kind of gravitate towards.
For sure, yeah. So if we're talking about RPGs in general, it's interesting because when I started playing RPGs, I would have categorized myself as your more scholarly, stand at a distance, cast spells, support people, even a ranged character. But I'll tell you what, several years ago as we were playing RPGs, I got into melee characters and I love them.
Yep.
I will be a barbarian any day. It is so fun. So I've completely shifted. I started out being those booky spellcasting characters, and now I'm like, let me hit something.
That's funny because I'm like the opposite. Okay. I love the range. I really love being that support character. So not even, I mean, like, range is fun. Don't get me wrong, like range attacks or whatever. But either changing the battlefield or finding some sneaky way to buff people or to change the way things are supposed to be, like all that stuff I really enjoy. And it's kind of funny because in real life, I'm more of the brute and you're more of the scholar. And so we kind of shift roles a little bit.
We just like to experiment when we role play.
That's right. Yeah. But even like in board game form, I always gravitate towards that kind of character.
Right.
And anytime we see an axe, like Anna immediately is like, that's my character.
Oh yeah, axes all the way, guys.
And so it's just very interesting to see that. And we kind of accidentally did that in this game where I kind of picked up the rogue character and you picked up the armor.
Yep.
And we didn't even like realize what we had done until we'd already started playing. And I was like, oh, this is so funny. But no, so I want to start with this game.
Did you do a hard to play yet?
That's what I'm about to do.
Oh, sorry.
So in Kinfire Delve, there are three versions of this game. They all essentially play the same way, except that they have different bad guys, different heroes, but the mechanics themselves more or less play the same. And so the idea is that you have this main bad guy at the end of the dungeon that you're trying to get to, and the deck acts as you progressing through the dungeon delve. And so what you'll do is you will play cards out of your hand to challenge the various either creatures or puzzles or whatever it may be that's surrounding the big bad. And you have to reach a certain value based on your cards and how you or your teammates support you. And then new cards come out. And then defeating these things lets you discard cards off the top of the deck, so you're getting down faster. And so you're not ever going to see all the same cards because cards are getting discarded in various ways. So you're only seeing part of the deck as you play through. You, whether you're playing one player or two players, you share a health counter. Once that health counter reaches zero, you automatically lose. There are other ways that you can lose, because unlike most games where you draw new cards, this game you draw a certain number of cards at the beginning of your turn. I'm sorry, at the beginning of the game. And the only way that you redraw is essentially by resetting from exhaustion. But that gives you an exhaustion card and a new way that you could lose the game. As you continue to dive deeper, eventually you're not going to be able to draw any more cards. I'm sorry. Let me back up. So after you reset, you essentially draw back up to your original card count. And so that's how you kind of navigate through your deck of, I think it's like 15 cards or something like that. Both characters play very differently, obviously.
It's 18 cards.
18 cards, thank you. Both characters play very differently. So when you get to the end of the deck and you can no longer draw, then the big bad comes out. You have new cards that you have to defeat to be able to attack the big bad. And then the big bad has its own thing as well. And once you defeated the big bad, then you win the game. If you die, you lose the game. Or if one of the bad end game triggers happen, you also lose the game. That's just a quick overview of how to play.
Yeah, for sure.
So with that, I really want to start with the art and the card quality and the box cover and the box quality of this game. Because if the rest of the Kinfire series is like what's in this little box, I'm extremely impressed.
Agreed.
The cards are awesome. The card, the card quality. There's a embossed kind of feel to it with several of the cards that are your like main character cards to give it that really fun feel, to really have the artwork pop. And the artwork just has this like unique vibe, and it makes me, I don't know anything else about the rest of the Kinfire world, but I wanted to learn more as I was looking at the different artwork pieces.
Yes, I agree. And there's flavor text on each card as well, which made me want to say, ooh, it makes me want to know more about the universe. Now, again, we're talking about board games that are set in a universe. You don't get to go watch a movie about this universe or this and that, but it made you want to have something like that.
Absolutely.
Because of how beautiful the artwork was, and again, the way that the cards had the flavor text. And man, there were some that were like kind of gilded looking. Mm-hmm. There were several that had the raised texture on them. They were beautiful components to this game. I completely agree with that. And all of those artists whose names that I murdered earlier, when we looked at this game and realized that it had four artists, I was like, well, of course, like there is phenomenal art in this game. And a lot of the artwork is unique, which I was very impressed the first time as I was going through my own personal hand. I would get a card and I'd think, oh, maybe there'll be another copy of this card later on.
Sure.
There is not. Every card is unique. Every card is beautiful. Now, the villain deck does have some that repeat, but
only on the creatures, though. Like, yeah, all of his artwork is different. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And also, I want to say that it doesn't feel like the cards repeat as much in the villain deck, because part of what you're doing is when you defeat a card, a lot of times you get a reward from it. Well, all the time you get a reward, but oftentimes the reward is you just move some off the top of the stack. So you're not actually fighting every single card that's in the dungeon well villain deck. And so it didn't feel
that's
like those cards...
That's what it's called, is the well, yeah.
Yes, yes, it's called the well. And so it didn't feel like it was repeated, even though there was some repeated artwork in the villain deck. But just, yeah, the uniqueness of it. And several of the sets of cards in the game are double-sided.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got unique artwork on both sides.
Yeah.
So it's just really, really pretty, so...
No, the artwork in this game is awesome. It completely hooked me immediately once I opened up the box, and I was very happy with it. And, you know, it's one of those games that you can buy the other copies. There, like I said, there's three different versions of this. You could play this up to six players because of once you add in more heroes, you can add more players.
Right.
I don't know that I would ever want to do that, but I will say, as we talk about why we chose this to be a two player instead of a solo, I think it plays good at solo. You get a different card count in your hand when you play solo, but when you play two players, there's a mechanic in the game where after you play your card, you can add a couple extra boosts to the attack or the whatever it may be. And I think that really comes alive when you have two players playing the game versus just a solo experience where you're just doing it on your own. Because you can boost yourself, but I think the experience is so different when you're playing with a second person.
Yes, and the interesting thing about boosting is that each card has an action ability on the card, but if you use it as a boost, it only gets a smaller bonus. Most of the time, a smaller. Some of them were bigger as boosts, but the majority of them was a lesser bonus that you would get if you used it as a boost that was in a little bar across the bottom. Mm-hmm. And so with each card, you're having to decide, if I use this to boost, then it could potentially beat a card, because the way that the game works is if you don't beat a card, you get hit by the card. And so it is advantageous to beat the card the first time you try, or in as few tries as possible.
Right.
And so, yeah, it was very interesting playing with two people and thinking, okay, I could use this card for its ability for me, but if I boost my partner, then we don't get hit, and then he gets that benefit. And playing at two players, you are still fully cooperative. You still share, you share one health die, and so every time my partner gets hit, I'm getting hit too.
Right.
So, yeah, it was an interesting experience. And one player, you would still have that decision. You'd have, am I going to use this card later on for its ability for me, or am I going to use it as a boost now? But for some reason, with two players, it just felt more meaningful to make that decision of, am I going to help you or save this for me?
Right. Well, and I think too, like, you know, you have two different characters that do things very differently. Not only their abilities are different, but also their decks act differently.
Right.
And not only does that give you variability from turn to turn, but it feels like you have this two-person party that's fighting together against all of these things, and they can really play off of each other. And one, even like towards the end of one of the games we were playing early on, I was like, oh, you could do this and that, and it could combo with your thing. And like just seeing like the ways that it chains really well together, and the way they can play off of each other, it was really cool to see. I really enjoyed that aspect. And obviously you're going to see different cards out of your deck at different times, each different game. So that changes the way that you play. We didn't have, for the one game we played tonight to get ready for the recording, neither one of us got our big card out until later in the game.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because, you know, if you draw that card early, you can get that card out two or three or four times throughout the game, but getting it later on meant that you almost wanted to hold on to it until the big bad came out, because then you could use it for him. And so it was just a very interesting deciding when to do what aspect.
Yeah, what Jared's talking about is each character has a card that's not in their deck, but is beside their board. It's called their lantern. And there's certain actions, either on cards or sometimes on challenges, that you overcome that can let you flip that card over. And then you get that ability. But then when you use it, you've got to flip it back over. So really, you could use your big awesome power-up card as often as you're able to structure the situations in the game to where you're getting to flip it over. And like Jared was saying, in the most recent game we played, we each only got to use it once. But in other games, that can happen a lot more frequently, depending on how you arrange the cards. And I did realize, I do like that even though it is not a deck builder game, obviously somebody built your deck.
Yeah.
And things do combo together, and things do fit together really, really well as you're going through your deck, which is fun.
Yeah. And having that tension of, do I want to give her a boost, or do I need to save this card for my own turn? Because I've only got so many turns before another exhaustion card comes out, making it that much harder to win the game. Do you have anything about this game that you just really don't care for?
I mean, not really. So typically in my preferences with games, I have not liked the two-player deck builders where you're like playing against the other person and trying to beat each other's monster, but working together trying to beat a monster felt different.
Yeah.
And that was fun. And just the other thing I'll mention again, it's not something that I disliked about the game, but I did wish that I knew more about the world.
Yeah.
And I was reading all the flavor text and trying to learn more about the world. And I mean, that's not a con of the game, but that was a lacking. I was like a lacking in myself. I was like, man, I wish I knew more about this world that I'm playing in, because the artwork sucks you in and the people and everything. So those are two not quite dislikes, but kind of things that came to mind. How about you?
I don't know that I had anything that I disliked about this game. This game hooked me really early on, and I was actually kind of surprised. I expected the feeling of I need to know more about this world to really appreciate some of the things going on in this game. But even just by itself, like there's enough flavor text and there's enough of just kind of piecing together what's going on here that you can really enjoy the experience just in this box by itself. And it's also one of those things where I don't have to buy the other two boxes to get a full experience. This has a full experience in the box, and I really enjoyed this for what it was. I'm very picky about my dungeon delves, and this one kind of sits in a fun space of it's only 45 minutes. You play your cards. It's got a nifty.
It says 60 on the box.
Yeah, I know it does. But
I mean, just for people to be aware.
No, I know. But I do think like once you understand the game, the game was not too hard to learn.
No.
And there's a nice helpful guide at the back of the instruction booklet that you can keep out to kind of help with symbology. And once you get going, like you really understand what you're doing. And at that point, you're just playing the game. And I really enjoyed that. And I was kind of surprised. I expected this game to be more in that like B minus range for me. But for me, it definitely sits in that A range.
Sure.
And I would love to come back to it. I definitely want to learn more about this world. I'm excited to get into some of the other games that they have, and excited to learn more about it for sure.
Yeah, it did make me want to get the other versions because, like you said, we had kind of this shielding character and you had the rogue character, and I was thinking, oh man, we only get two characters. What would more characters do in this world? What would other abilities look like in this world? So that was kind of a fun thing where I did feel like it was a complete gameplay experience, but it made me wonder, man, if I had others, what would it be? And so I think if any of you listeners want to get multiples and tell us how it plays at 4 mm-hmm. or 6 or something like that, we'd be really interested in hearing about that and about the different characters and how they work together. Because the characters that they chose for this box and the decks that they built for this box did work very well together. So I'm curious if that works across games as well as it works within game. Would be something that some of y'all can comment and let us know about.
Yeah. And I imagine these characters that you find in the three mini boxes are in the main boxes as well. If not, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it's completely different characters. That's just me guessing. But I'm excited to learn more for sure.
Yeah. And I would say I probably would place this game at an A as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't go up to an A+. I don't think I'd go down to an A-, though, because, again, like we said, the artwork was good. The play was smooth.
Very smooth.
There is quite a bit of iconography, and that made me nervous at first, because we always try to talk about, you know, how accessible is this game? How intimidating would it be for new gamers? And so when I first went through the rules, which were really fast, by the way. Like, it was really fast to learn. We got into playing probably within 15 minutes or so the first time that we ended up playing. But then I looked at the cards and saw the iconography and got a little bit intimidated. But really, it was not bad. And they've got a really nice kind of cheat sheet for the iconography in the back. And by several rounds in, I wasn't even really having to reference that anymore. So just wanted to put that plug in there. Really, I think all three of the games that we talked about tonight are pretty accessible for new players.
I would agree.
Obviously, Isla is a little bit more of a commitment if you are going to go through all five scenarios. But, I mean, A Gentle Rain, you hardly even have to explain. You can just sit down and start playing it with somebody. And and Vainglory's Grotto did not take very long to learn. It was very accessible. So,
and I think it would be even faster, like, if one person knew how to play and the other person was, like, being shown.
For sure,
that would be super quick to just get into. Yeah, even better at 2, in our opinion. So, all right. Well, with that, thank you all so much for listening. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the games today, we would love to hear from you. Links to all of our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I totally get it. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on BoardGameGeek. As always, the links are in our descriptions. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. All these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Ashley McCaffrey for her cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chislin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week as we head back over to the kids' table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Goodbye.